Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And a very good evening to you, Ben, and hi, everybody.
As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. The text and WhatsApp number, but unfortunately we can't access the text numbers this evening. So you'll have to bear with us on that one, but hopefully we'll be back in action next time we're on, which of course is the same time next week. And you can also catch us, or you will be able to catch us live on dublincityfm.ie when the website is back up as well. So a few technical problems there, but we're always here live on 103.2 Dublin City FM. So we get straight to it, and what to see in the sky over the coming week.
Oh, in the tomorrow and tonight, or should I say tonight and tomorrow, the last two evenings for the International Space Station. Tonight's one,
11:20. Not a great pass.
No, it's not. Only 3 minutes or so, and maximum altitude 12 degrees. It is quite bright, though.
Minus quite so. It's quite low. It'll be quite low, and maximum brightness, mm-hmm. I say, is -1.4,
which is
bright, but yeah. Sometimes it can be 5 or 10 times brighter than when it's at maximum. Mm-hmm. Well, it can be up to -3.8, I think, magnitude at times.
Yep, so you have until tomorrow to see the last of that in our evening skies. Still nice to see in the early mornings. And ISS in the evening next, September the 10th until September the 29th. And just put that in your diary. And we'll keep an eye on that one for you. Let's go on to the planets now. Mercury. It is lost, unfortunately, in the glow of sunset at the moment. Venus, on the other hand, brilliant at -4.0. So that shows you what sort of brightness Venus is. And I did see it the other morning, early in the morning, and I had to look at it twice, because it is bright, definitely. It rises above the east-northeast horizon, which is exactly where I was looking, about an hour before the first glimmer of dawn, which is exactly where I was looking. And I didn't have to know the times because I saw it, which is great. Venus climbs higher into the dawn sky, finally grows too bright, then it disappears until the following night. Mars, magnitude +1.5. It's quite hard to see. It's right now on the border of Leo and Virgo, if you want to get into the night sky world. It glows low in the west in late twilight and sets soon after dark. Yeah, so it's not really very good to see. Jupiter, magnitude 1.9, so it's around the same sort of brightness as the International Space Station. And it rises at the beginning of dawn. That's one or two fists lower left of Venus. So it's not too far away, and that's a good marker to go and see Jupiter. Saturn, +0.9, is in Pisces. It's not brilliant to see at the moment. The other thing is, well, that the we'll call it the rings are almost edge on just at the moment, and Saturn rises about 11 p.m. but the best time to try shining a telescope on Saturn is just before dawn, where it's near its highest in the south. Yeah, that would make total sense. Uranus +5.8 and Neptune 7.9. they're two difficult ones to see. And Neptune is still described as the telescopic star. I love that. I don't know who did that for us. Pretty good. So there we go. So just put the date in the diary for the International Space Station, September the 10th until the 29th of September next. So can't wait already.
Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have the moon and the sun. And at the moment, we have a 5.2% waning crescent moon. It is currently above the horizon, and it will set in just over an hour from now at 8:45 p.m, rising again just before 3 a.m. tomorrow morning, when it'll be down to about 3.8% phase, and due south at its highest, crossing the meridian at 12:20 p.m. That's 20 minutes after midday tomorrow. And when it sets tomorrow evening, the 23rd, at 9:30, it'll be down to a 1.2% phase. As so you can gather from that, we are approaching new moon, and that will indeed be on Thursday, the 24th. Sunrise tomorrow in Dublin is at 5:27 a.m., which is 10 minutes later than a week ago. Local noon when the sun is at its highest and passes the meridian, that's 1:31 p.m. And the sun sets at 9:34 p.m. tomorrow, which is 9 minutes earlier than a week ago. And then we have civil twilight until 20 past 10, then nautical twilight until just before 11:30, and then we're into astronomical night, which goes on until the 3:30 the following morning. No astronomical night at the moment, not for another week. Astronomical night when the sun is at least 18 degrees below the horizon, and when you have a better chance of doing some deep sky observing. Just some pointers for those planets. Ooh, tomorrow morning, Jupiter is 4.25 degrees to the lower right of the moon. That's about 2 or 3 fingertip, the width of your 2 fingers, say, at arm's length. And on Friday, your friend, Pluto, which used to be a planet, but it is not longer.
That's not funny.
Is at opposition. It's in Sagittarius, if you want to go and try and find it out. But it's at magnitude plus 14.4, so you're definitely going to need a telescope for that, and a fairly decent one at that. And then next Monday morning, that little red object to the upper right of the moon, that is Mars. As Nocti Lucent cloud season comes to an end, I still haven't seen any. I don't think I saw any last year either.
I got to see a couple some early in the morning, just before dawn, about 2 weeks ago. They're nice to see, though.
Oh, they are. Yeah. Quite beautiful, iridescent, electric blue high clouds up in the, the troposphere. They're beyond the troposphere. They're up about 80 kilometres or so. But I think I'll have to wait probably until next year to see that again. So, oh yes, what does that mean? Tomorrow we'll have 19 minutes less daylight than a week ago. So the night's closing in. You can just about notice it, I think. And tomorrow another almost 3 minutes less daylight than today, when there will be 16 hours and 7 minutes between sunrise and sunset.
Now, we know that our traffic man, Mark Anthony, loves SpaceX and all the bits of it. Yeah, and yesterday evening, 21:27 GMT, about 11 seconds just before liftoff, the company tried to aborted the mission. I'm not sure exactly what the problem was, but it's not too serious by the looks of things, because they're going again this evening. Our time, that's GMT, when they just get that for you. 21:12 or something like that. Anyway, we keep an eye on that in the Google world. You just don't know until it actually lifts off. So Tuesday, 5:12 p.m. EDT, which is
Eastern Daylight Time. Yeah. 5.
So 21:12 GMT. So just 10 minutes, just after 10 minutes past 9 this evening. They plan to do it. So get on stream, I suppose, about 15 minutes just before liftoff. It's a great thing to watch the countdown as well. I love doing that. NASA TV, something like that. So let's hope it gets off this time. So it consists of 8 satellites going into a medium Earth orbit, all which will have been launched by SpaceX. So I think there's only two on this particular one, communication satellites. So what they're going to communicate, we just don't know, because we're kept in the dark with a lot of these things. Here's a on this day in 1972, July the 22nd, the Venera 8 spacecraft landed on Venus. I think I was just too young for things like that. It didn't really mean an awful lot to me that time. And it travelled for 117 days to get to Venus. The spacecraft only made it 50 minutes into the planet's harsh environment.
That's the one where there's that famous photograph of the surface of Venus. You can see the foot of the lander. and it lasted a few minutes, not sure how long.
Not very
long. But because of the high pressure, 90 times the pressure of Earth and 400 degrees centigrade, you wouldn't want to step out there, even in the best spacesuit. You'd be crushed and burned, and not to mention
melted,
poisoned and corroded with sulfur. Not sulfur dioxide, hydrogen. Sulfuric acid.
Sulfuric acid. Not a pleasant acid by any means, but they helped the experts and scientists learn about the Venus's clouds, which hover at a very, very high altitude, and that the atmosphere is actually a lot clearer close to the surface. That's why we got to see the pictures of the foot of the lander for a very short time indeed. So I wonder if there's anything left of it up there. I would imagine not. 1972 with sulfuric acid raining down on you all the time. So there we are. On this day, July the 22nd, 1972, the Venera, I presume that's the way to pronounce it. The Venera 8.
Venera or Venera. Yeah, Venera. Venera.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's...
Thank you for that, John. And Felix Baumgartner, unfortunately, passed away. It's a story we covered at the time. Not this story. He died last Thursday, but way back in 2012, we did cover his
jump
from his balloon. I think the balloon was made by Red Bulls, and they were involved.
They were seriously involved,
pressurized capsule at the bottom of this high-flying balloon that went up to 39 kilometers or 24 miles above the Earth's surface. And he got into his, essentially, kind of his space suit and jumped. So it's the highest high dive parachute jump. Yeah. He did, of course, the air up there is very, very cold and very, not very dense at all, very thin. And he did go into a tumble. I think that was one of the fears, that he would be get into an uncontrolled tumble and wouldn't be able to get out, and he would lose consciousness.
Yeah, he did go into the tumble.
He did go into a tumble. But yeah, he made it down. In that episode, he recorded the fastest free fall at 843 miles per hour, or 1,357 kilometers an hour, or thereabouts.
He broke the sound barrier.
And the sound barrier, which is about 700 miles an hour, depends on the medium and the temperature, but basically at about 20 degrees centigrade and normal atmospheric pressure, it's about 700 miles an hour. But up there, it is the speed of sound is a bit slower. So he did break the sound barrier. He was a helicopter pilot, and he did a lot of base jumping and jumping from buildings with carbon wings. And he flew across the English Channel way back when on his he jumped out of an airplane, and with his carbon wings, he was over France at the time, and flew across the English Channel towards England. A bit of a controversial character, though, John. He was he did a lot of social media posting, and he wasn't a fan of the Green parties or LGBTQ rights. He was a bit on the right wing side, but he was always a thrill seeker since the days he was a child, and that's what he always wanted to do. He said he didn't like to be called a thrill seeker, actually, because he said, no, it's all in the planning. He said he wasn't an adrenaline junkie, because he liked to plan things to the nth degree to make sure it was safe, or relatively safe. I don't know how he died, but it was in
a paragliding accident.
Paragliding accident, yeah, was it?
Yeah, yes. Some sort of a problem on the way down, and just didn't make it, unfortunately. Now, he initially struggled with claustrophobia, believe it or not, after spending time in the pressurized suit required for the jump. But he eventually overcame it with the help of a sports psychologist and other specialists as well. So he was lucky that way, I suppose, that he was able to do that. I don't know. I'd be probably with him in that, with the claustrophobia thing in a big spacesuit. I don't know about you. We can give it a bash anyway, wouldn't we, just to see. Yep, so there we go. So unfortunately he's no longer with us, but I remember the jump. It was scheduled originally for 9th of October 2012, but bad weather put it up to the 14th of October, and he, if you would like to see it, it's still on YouTube or any of those channels that are available. And I watched it again the other day, and he just gets out of the thing and just drops as if nothing had happened, and got up to 800 odd miles per hour and then slowed down as the atmosphere grabbed hold of him, and he made it quite safely. So it didn't take him that long to get down, actually. Only minutes, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, John. I just want to mention relatively briefly about astrophotography competition. If you want to have a look, there's a website, reachforthestars.ie/exhibition, and basically it's an exhibition, and you can go on there and have a look, and you can vote for your favourite photograph. And the closing for voting ends at 5 p.m. on Thursday the 24th, and you're restricted to one vote per person. But there's a number of categories, and a few people from Dublin have reached the finals. People we know, mm-hmm. or at least know of, and some of them we've had here. Anthony Lynch, mm-hmm. who took a lovely photograph of the lake in the sky, but that was down in Loch Tay in County Wicklow.
The Sandy Gap, it's a lovely part of the world up there.
Evetna Ivanova, who I'm not familiar with, but she took a beautiful photograph from Portmarnock in County Dublin. And Marty McCormick, he took a photograph in Glasnevin. He called his Winter Nebula in Bloom. So the exhibition is on later in the year, but you can vote for up until Thursday, 5 p.m, 24th of July. Have a look at all those lovely photographs. They are quite amazing. Oh, Anthony Lynch, he had a lovely photograph in there too. I did mention him. And the photographs were taken between 26th of April 2024 and the 2nd of June this year. And there was a number of categories, which I won't go into at the moment. But it's competition is organised by DIAS. Maybe we'll cover that again. The winners will be announced in August, and we will give you more information then about, I don't know whether there's going to be a physical exhibition or not, but if you go to reachforthestars.ie/exhibition, you'll be able to see a wonderful array, mm-hmm. collection of photographs, and vote for your favourite if you so desire.
There you go. Now, Beetlejuice, back in the news again. And I remember when there was a dimming of Beetlejuice for a while. They didn't know exactly what was going on, but they seem to have cracked the 1,000-year-old Beetlejuice mystery with its first ever sighting of the secret companion. Would you believe? A blurry blob that passes in front of it every now and again. And papers that predicted Beetlejuice's companion believed that no one would likely ever be able to image it, but they have, seemingly. And this one is from the NOIR Lab Observatory, and a nice photograph. It's just a fuzzy bit in front, and it happens every now and again. And after a long wait, astronomers have finally seen the stellar companion of the famous star Betelgeuse. It's just to the top left, or we'll call it corner, of Orion's belt, those three stars that are easily recognisable. And one of the things that I like to watch.
You notice it's red, orangey colour.
Mm. Yeah, and it's...
And it's a big star. If you placed it in the centre of our solar system, where the sun is, it would... Well, I don't know how many suns you'd get into it, but the orbit, the diameter, it would fill basically out to beyond Earth, and then it'd go as far as Mars.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely huge. I think the sun is huge, but it's... tiny compared with
I think they mentioned something like 20 times the size of our own sun.
It must be 20 times the diameter. It must be more than that.
But it's disappearing and expanding, and one day it's going to explode. Implode first, or explode, whichever, and then implode, and then become one of these white dwarfy things. But they reckon that if it does blow in our lifetime and we do see it, it will blot out a good part of our evening skies, and as about 400 light years away from us at the moment. So people are still looking at that just to see if something will happen. But there's this little blob that just circulates. It's like having its own orbit around Betelgeuse as well. It's just a blob. Don't know exactly what it is yet. We haven't been told. But we, I'm sure they'll cannibalise and have a little look to see what's exactly in that.
Thank you, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Unfortunately, we can't access your any text or WhatsApp messages you may send us this evening. Now, John, I want to talk about Boeing. Remember their Starliner?
Mm-hmm.
They brought up to the... They've had two flights so far. They had a test flight. Well, they had a manned flight, which was when they... The first... crewed flight was Suni Williams and Butch Wilmore. They flew them to the International Space Station, but they didn't come back on that. They were supposed to go up for 8 days, but they stayed about 8 months because of a little helium leak on the... They don't want to take any chances. A little helium leak on the in the Starliner capsule, and they... But that came back down to Earth empty. Well, probably... Maybe they took some rubbish with them and some... I'm not sure about some over equipment or bits left over from experiments because they thought it might burn up in the atmosphere. That's why they didn't put any the crew, Butch or Suni, back in it. But Boeing are going to go ahead to try and fix those problems with the Starliner. Now, the Starliner is already 10 years behind schedule, and it's planned to bring people and equipment to the International Space Station. But they're going to go ahead, even though they're more than $2 billion over budget at the moment. And even though the International Space Station is due to be decommissioned and probably crashed into the ocean in the year 2030 or 2031, so being so late and only a few possible journeys to be made. But they're going to go ahead, I suppose, maybe trying... cut their losses, but they are going to go ahead and see if they can fix those plug those helium seal leaks. How good luck to them with that. I'm sure they will.
They will
get their money back, though. Not likely.
Do they expect to get their money back? I don't think so either. Doesn't
no they, well they, if they've been hoping to fly it since 2015, they've missed a lot of paychecks on that one.
Yeah, now, if you're an eclipse watcher, like somebody that I know not too far away from me, 2026, it's now, I suppose, time to really start thinking if you want to go and visit this. It's not too far away from us, August the 12th, 2026. There's a total solar eclipse that will flash across the small part of our little northern hemisphere here, bringing a totality to Greenland, Iceland, and Spain. The only trouble is it only lasts a couple of minutes, but... Is it worth seeing? I'll ask my master.
Yes. There's no doubt about it. A total solar eclipse is worth seeing if it's any more than a couple of seconds. Yes.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's going to sweep around our... I wonder, is there a planned, probably cruise ship to go out into the southwest of Ireland to catch a bit
I'd imagine so. It'd be worth keeping an eye on, I suppose, Eclipse World, something like that.
Eclipseophile.com, I think, is the website. And that will sweep across northern Spain, north of Madrid and out to the Balearic Islands. At that stage, totality, and in those places, totality will last about 1 minute and 20 seconds, 1 minute and 40 seconds, depending on where you are. And it will be late in the afternoon or early evening as the sun is... setting. For if you want to see it for longer, it's Iceland, just on the southwest tip of Iceland. I think it'll pass, but
west, down Reykjavik direction.
Down, yes, or even a bit further south than Reykjavik. Actually, I'm not sure whether Reykjavik is going to be in the path of totality. I don't think so. I'm not sure. Eclipse of oil and do that. You can get all that information on the NASA website as well, and. But the chances of clearer weather in Greenland or Iceland.
See, the thing is about Iceland, and I've been to Iceland as well, the weather can change minute by minute, so you have a good chance to see that, but it's going to be cold up there in August.
even in August.
Yeah, Spain, pretty good. Guaranteed nearly, but probably you'll get a rain shower or something. So you've got to remember that totality only lasts for a couple of minutes, but planning the perfect eclipse trip can take months or even years, as you well know. So how do you decide? We know people, and we know of people who've bought two tickets and left it till the last minute to decide where they were going to see it. And that's what happens when you're in. It's like, I suppose, going to a football match and paying premium tickets prices. So there we go. We'll remind you more about this.
We will.
As the time comes along.
Will I see you in northern Spain?
I'm sort of half thinking about it, yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is the weather going to be good?
Northern Spain in the middle of August, there's a good chance. Well, if you go to eclipseofile.com, I think it is, and they'll show the percentage, average percentage of cloud for each area along the path, a little graph, where you can pick your, like when I went to Texas last year, I was kind of playing the odds about where there'll be less, and it depends on prevailing winds and mountains and things like that, the time of the year. And so it was just basically playing the odds, where's the greatest chance of having a clear sky. But as it happened, the sky wasn't that clear, but I mean, there was a few wispy clouds, all right. And you were mentioning somebody bought two tickets on the same day. They had a flight booked, I think the one flight booked to Dallas and one flight to Vermont, if I'm not mistaken. And on the morning, they decided to go to, but I think the flights were leaving more or less the same time, and he went for Vermont. But his photographs, we were showing our photographs of us boiling to death in the Texas and so on. And he was up there showing his photographs of his cover, the place where he was covered in snow, but he had beautifully clear skies, clearer than we had. So, you know, you can play the odds, but there's no guarantee.
I think you mentioned as well that you should get really into the center part of totality, because you had a friend or a relative, was it, who lives on the outskirts?
Yeah,
a school friend who lived there, and he wasn't going to budge. And Ben said, "I'm going in. I'm going to get a longer pass, etc."
Or some people who go to the outskirts to get, if they live in an area that's where they're going to be partially eclipsed by maybe 30% or something like that. And then I've heard of people saying, "Oh, we'll go nearer the center path to get 70 or 80%. But that absolutely makes no sense. That's like, let's say you did a football match in Wembley you want to go to, and say, "Oh, we'll go over to London and we'll stand outside the stadium."
And listen.
But you don't see anything. Yeah. No, makes no sense.
Anyway, we're nearly there.
I had loads more stuff I wanted to get through.
Always have loads. NASA's Parker Solar Probe has released some of the closest ever images of the sun, taken this time last year. And it's captured some stunning new images from within the sun's atmosphere as well. I've yet to see some of them, apart from the ones I'm looking at here in black and white, unfortunately, from the that printer that we have. And December 24th, 2024, the solar probe started its closest approach to the sun, flying just 3.8 million miles from the solar surface. Must be quite hot.
Absolutely. And it'll be back doing another pass, I think it's later this year. But that's all the time we have this evening. We'll go back into that again. We had lots and lots of material we had hoped to get through, but that's just the way it goes. Don't forget, our email address is astronomy@wcfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items and for driving the sound desk. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show. Now it's music all the way here until 2 a.m. on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Dublin's Greatest Hits. And from 10 p.m. to midnight, Nigel Wood has his Ear to the Globe with his world music mix. You name that part of the planet, he has music from that, from there. And then from midnight till 2 a.m., Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues, and soul. Please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We will be back with all the latest news from each corner and every dimension of the universe Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.